Well, let's go back to the glorious Eastwood. Your first novel, and I know that you were an inspector in Hong Kong, so you have an awful lot of background. Mm-hmm. So you must have really had a story that you wanted to tell.
Well, I did, but as I said, when I left university, I had a master's degree in international relations, and I actually did my MA in the United States at Michigan State. The last thing in the world I wanted to be was a policeman, and then I traveled, and the Hong Kong police were looking for people to work as inspectors. They had a problem with corruption there, and in the British Commonwealth, they were hiring people from Australia, New Zealand, and Canada, and I went to Ottawa, to the British High Commission. I applied, and I was accepted. And when I ended up in Hong Kong, it was like going through a looking glass. It was like Alice going through the looking glass. It was a completely different world for me. And I think it's when I arrived in Hong Kong and I policed the Crown Colony, which is a city larger than life. It's like Hemingway's Paris. It's like New York. It's a fascinating and wonderful city. It's living on the edge of time. When I policed Hong Kong, I knew I would write about it. I didn't know how. I didn't know when. In fact, there was a period of gestation. I didn't write anything for 5 or 6 years after I came back. I returned to Canada in 1976, 77, and it ruminated, just sat there, and after a while I started putting pen to paper, because I knew that a part of me was leaving, and I knew that I would have to write about Hong Kong, and I did. And then I polished it off in about a year or two of writing, hard writing, and received one of the highest advances in Canadian history for a novel. It did very well in Canada, and now we're going to try to see if we can break into the United States, and we're very pleasantly surprised with how McGraw-Hill's received the book. And they're very optimistic about its chances, because it does speak about all the romance and grandeur of an era. It's about the colony, the last British colony. Voice too low. Okay.
Now you were born in Canada. Where
I was born in Rotterdam, the Netherlands.
Ah. You do have kind of a
I have look. I have a Dutch look about me, but my father is Polish, and that's where some of the six languages I speak comes from. Much the same as I was never going to be an academic, and I'm only 2 credit short of a doctorate. I was never going to be a policeman, yet I'm a sergeant of police, an active police investigator in the city of Toronto. Not that I was ever going to be a novelist, and I'm a novelist. And there's another one coming on the pipes right now. There's another one I'm working on.
How did you happen to go to Michigan State?
Well, my master's supervisor in Canada was an American, a very nice man named Donald Lammers, who's head of their graduate school. And he actually interested me in the Orient, because he served with the U.S. Navy in the Korean War, and of course their rest and rehab was in Hong Kong. And I have many good friends who are Americans, and it seemed natural to go to Michigan. It was a good school. I enjoyed it.
What did you study there?
International relations.
Uh-huh. So when you graduated, you said you never expected to be a policeman, but you did apply.
I did apply. It was more because do you know what the Foreign Legion must seem like to some people? I think Hong Kong has that aura, that mysticism, the mystique of the Orient. And because I had the venue open to me, I knew Don had indicated that the British High Commission were interested in people, and the venue was there, and I grabbed it.
You've never been in Hong Kong?
I had never been further west than Vancouver in all my life. I went so far west that I was east of it.
You say you speak 5 languages, but did you speak Cantonese at that time?
I learned Cantonese with the Royal Hong Kong Police, and I learned a lot about life with the Royal Hong Kong Police, too. It's one of the largest police forces in the world. The scope of policing there is just gargantuan standards of policing, because they deal with illegal aliens, they deal with a drug problem that is very large, even by our Western standards today, because we're all aware of the problem we have with hard drugs. They deal with a political reality, because they have a very strong right-wing and a very strong left-wing government very close to them. They have Taiwan, the People's Republic of China, just next door to Taiwan, so you have the right and the left in juxtaposition. And the playing fields for espionage take place in the hotels and the restaurants of Hong Kong.
Now, some of the events in your novel, do they parallel your own experiences? Here we have a student riot and a ship explosion, all sorts of murders.
Well, some of the things do. I think whenever a novelist writes, anyone who tells you that he doesn't try to put some of himself into a novel is perhaps being less than honest, because you have to have some basis, and the basis is what's inside you. And so when I wrote about Hong Kong, understand The Glorious East Wind is a story about a young police inspector, and it's about someone who finds his best friend murdered in a police quarter, and himself then suspect in a drug scandal. And then it just grows, and suddenly he finds himself the hunted as the drug scandal burgeons into a land deal. But I'm giving away the plot, and I don't want to do that.
Now, we talk about Oriental gangs, but that's what you would expect in Hong Kong.
Well, I'm very fortunate in some respects. I'm considered a North American expert in Oriental gangs, what we call triad societies. And a lot of the learning experience for me came because of, I think there's a lucidity, an intellectual exercise that takes place when you go to university, and I was able to use that ability to prioritize knowledge and to set objectives and to work through a formula in my police work. And when I went to Hong Kong, I utilized that to work through and to understand and come to grips with the psyche of the Oriental criminal mind. And that does reflect in the Glorious East Wind. It reflects in my day-to-day policing, because I certainly liaise with American police forces on an ongoing basis in terms of Oriental crime.
How difficult was it for you to adjust to police work, you as a Westerner and a Caucasian in an overwhelmingly Chinese city?
Well, Hong Kong has a population of 5.5 million souls, and the language is predominantly Chinese, whatever dialect. 97% of the population speaks Chinese, but the police force is a very, very British. It's a colonial police force, very paramilitary. The hierarchy in that police force has become very local. The reason, raison d'etre for that, is because as the lease, as we come closer to the termination of the lease in 1997, the reins of government revert from the British to the Chinese hegemony, the police authority will have to be localized. So when I was there, most of my superiors were Chinese, but they were working with the British jurisprudence and legal and police procedures. An interesting aside is the fact that although we use the British system of policing in Hong Kong, they use sidearms, and it's a very violent place, notwithstanding the British legal system, in the sense that the bobby is there. The Hong Kong police are very well trained in the fine arts of self-defense and the use of the firearm. They're good shots. It's a force of 33,000 persons, I believe, was the last count. When I was there, there were 27,000 people.
Well, that's big. It's proportionally larger than New York's, I would say.
I would think so. I would think so.
Yeah, it's about 30,000.
Yeah,
plus, of course, I guess the police force, when you consider the housing police and the various other police forces that we have, the transit police,
New York,
it's even larger.
Well, New York is a country. I'm aware of that. New York is a country. Every time I come here, I'm in awe, in fairness. I'm in awe of the scope and the grandeur and the complexity of policing here. But Hong Kong is very similar, because where we don't have the numbers of police, Hong Kong has to deal with the various problems of policing that you don't have here.
Oh, no, 33,000 is big enough for an army.
Oh, it does have an army capability. They have 12 Saracen tanks, several helicopters, a marine division, which is the largest police marine unit in the world, with about 40 ships. The largest ship is 110 feet. There's three of those, because they also have to police the islands, the outer islands of Hong Kong. They have a problem with drug importation from the Golden Triangle, and that the drugs do come in via junk. And so it's very important that they police that the maritime outer reaches of Hong Kong.
Now, in your tenure in Hong Kong, did you associate primarily with other policemen, Caucasian policemen, or did you also have Chinese friends?
I have many Chinese friends and many American friends. There's a very large expatriate community, and there were some Americans. Actually, the very first people to befriend me, because I was a lonely fellow there for some time, because it is a cultural shock, and you have associates on the police force, and you have sort of friends. But really, to take me into their home and to have a meal with me, there was an American couple in their 50s from Long Island, who had been there for some time, and their names were Stein. Nice people, very kind people, and I'll always remember how kind they were to me. They took me to their home, and we had a nice Western meal, and I had the pleasures of their company for an evening. I enjoyed that thoroughly.
You were in Hong Kong for 5 years.
Yes.
What brought you back to North America?
I wanted to continue on a doctorate program, if you can believe it. And the first thing that I did after I went back to do some studies is I reflected on what I had learned as a policeman and how I'd learned about life and the sense of dedication and the integrity of the work that I do as a police officer, and that I believe is indigenous to the profession. That's something that stayed with me. So when I came back, it was only natural that I continue on as a policeman in Canada, and I've enjoyed it.
Where are you studying your doctorate?
I was going to continue it at Canadian University at U of T.
But you are going to do it?
Oh, I'm going to. I'd like to finish it. Yeah.
You're so close to it.
Oh, yeah, but I'd like to finish my next book.
Well,
and it's a pretty full schedule for a policeman to work shifts and write novels, and I'm working on a screenplay for a movie, so these things keep you busy.
Yeah. Well, did you have any trouble making the transition from Hong Kong to the Toronto Police Department?
Yeah. The pace of life is proportionately slower. With respect to our American friends, Hong Kong is probably the fastest pace of life I've ever encountered, even Manhattan. Mind you, Manhattan's only a decibel shorter than Hong Kong in terms of the freneticness of its pace. But Hong Kong, the pace of life is very quick. I work 10-hour days, 6 days a week, and then in the evenings I work some more.
Mm.
So you learn a lot about life when you police in Hong Kong.
What does a policeman do in Toronto? There's no crime in Toronto.
I'd like to think there isn't, but there must be some. I think the one of the more pleasant things to realize is that Toronto is a relatively safe city and a very cosmopolitan and friendly city. And of course, we always encourage our American friends to come up and have a stay with us. It is a city of about 3 million souls, and I think the reality is when you have 3 million people that there is some criminal activity, and there we have to respond in a professional manner, and we do.
Well, I did an interview with Joe Wambaugh about 3 weeks ago, and he filmed a movie in Toronto, and he said, any standard. Toronto is much more civilized than any American city that he's ever been in.
I take that as a compliment.
Well, he was giving Canada and Toronto in particular a compliment. His complaint about America is that Americans are undisciplined. They demand too much freedom, and they're very difficult to control because they don't like authority. They don't like it. And it's reflected in the fact that they insist on carrying guns, and they demand this democracy and independence more than almost any country in the world. And according to Wambaugh, he thinks it's out of hand. And that's why he prefers Canadian cities, because the level of crime there is much less than it is in the United States, for reasons that he doesn't fathom, and I don't know either.
It might have to do with the very different historical hegemony of the two nations, and we took a different path than our American brothers. Certainly, we're more reserved people. But remember, at the other end, we look askance and say, well, America is a violent society. And American media talks about the violence. But there's also creativity in the United States, and there's the creative urge and the impulse and the dynamism. So there's the good and the bad that comes with that independence, that rugged individualism. I have my own sense of how dangerous guns are. Obviously, I don't think there's a police officer extant in North America who believes in the unbridled right of people to carry AK-47s or AR-15s or handguns concealed. There is certainly the danger that you will settle an argument by the worst possible means rather than the best possible means. I think that violence, though, is indigenous to society throughout the world.
And I want to also clarify that while there is a level of violence, much of it, although there's some rural violence, but much of it seems to be in the urban areas, and there are great stretches of the United States where nothing happens.
I know.
In North and South Dakota, they could go years and nothing happens.
And it's lovely. And it's lovely.
Portions of New England
and
the Midwest.
Because America, for all that people paint it, is a very wonderful country, and it is a democracy, and a democracy has the edges that other systems of government don't have. And sometimes, and I don't want to wax eloquent on it, but sometimes we forget that the democracy is sometimes the freedom to make mistakes. And that is something that you have to cherish as much as the freedom to do good.
Now, Wambaugh was telling me that he got into a lot of trouble when he wrote his books. He had to get permission from the chief of police to write, and he didn't do it. Now, you wrote The Glorious East Wind. Did you have to get permission?
I had full consent of my commissioner and chief, and they have been very supportive. In fact, the chief is coming down to New York for my book launch. He's a very kind man to allow me the freedom to express myself in the written word, and I am very happy that he's given me that freedom. There's a certain responsibility that comes with that, and that for me means that I will never write about anything that I have done in terms of cases, and I will never talk about any of the guardroom gossip and sort of use that as fodder. I don't believe that Joe Wambaugh does that by any extent, because he's
very respected. Well, he did in his early books, and another guy who does it is William Kaunitz, who's up in Toronto today, in fact.
A juxtaposition of the incongruous.
Yeah, he wrote One Police Plaza. You might remember. He was a cop in New York for more than 20 years.
Yeah.
But he does use a lot of the things that cops do, both good and bad, in his book.
Well, I prefer to talk about policemen as individuals and people, and we talk about them in that way. I don't in any way try to whitewash them, and as you can see, if you read The Glorious East Wind, there are some large anti-heroes who are senior police officials on a broad scope, but I don't reflect real people in the sense that you could one day pigeonhole them and say, aha, he's talking about him. And certainly no one in Hong Kong is ever going to say, Chuck, you said that about me, or in any other book I ever write about policing. There's a certain responsibility a writer has when he's also a police officer. There's an integrity, and there is a moral imperative to keep the privacy of the and confidentiality of the people that he deals with intact. And so the victims that I deal with and the suspects that I deal with, the police officers I deal with, well, don't have to worry that I'll ever broach that, because that's not right. And perhaps that's a rather reserved Canadian way of looking at the potential that fiction has to sensationalize. But I think there's enough there in the world that exists in my subconscious, that is the fantasy world that is fiction, that will intrigue my audience without hurting anybody.
This background in police work, you sat down to write this book. Was it hard?
Well, it does assist it, certainly. I think that The Glorious East Wind probably is, if I dare say, and if I'm presumed to be brash about it, it's probably the best novel written about the Royal Hong Kong Police in terms of the technocracy, the technology, the administrative or an organizational infrastructure, and the dynamics of a colonial police force dealing with the last governor, because Hong Kong is the last British Crown colony. So when we look at Hong Kong and the various things that come into play, the police, the government, the land barons, the drug barons, the triad bosses, you have the cauldron from which a very interesting mulligan stew can be made.
Your next book, going to be in Canada or back in Hong Kong?
No, the next book is actually going to be set in Europe, and it's going to be...
Probably in the Netherlands.
No, no, yeah, but it'd be nice if it could be, I suppose. But no, it's going to be set in Europe, and it's going to be set in Africa. And it's halfway through the gestation period, and it probably will be written within the next year. And the one thing that I'm very proud of is when I do my books that I research them thoroughly, so the most part of the work will be in the research. And I'm looking forward to getting it out and having my readership enjoy it.
Well, my last question of you, are you now a celebrity cop in Toronto?
I am still, I'll tell you, the reality of it all is, on Monday morning when I start my day and I put on my uniform and I walk into my division and I parade my troops, I am Sergeant Conkle of the Metropolitan Toronto Police Force, and that is as far as it goes.
Sergeant Conkle, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me here.